The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me on the Breakfast Grill today is Her Excellency Kamla Shirin Lakhdar, US Ambassador to Malaysia. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I want to begin with that expression that's caught many headlines, America first. I understand that this is an expression that predates the present president, Donald Trump. Perhaps you can help us understand, is this America first agenda about the new president, or is it about the American public?
So I think you saw that this started President Trump began using this phrase during the campaign. And I think it spoke to his concern of that Americans wanted a president who would focus on employment, the economy, the situation of Americans. And so what he was conveying, I think, to many Americans was, I will put you first. And in my policies and how I would be president, I will consider your interests. So it was very much a focus on the interests of Americans and spoke to Americans' concerns. And I think as president, that is still the language he's used. This is, I'm looking after the interests of all Americans. I'm looking after the interests and concerns of all Americans. And I think that's how, and this is hard to say, America's a big country. We are a very diverse country. But I think it was, I am concerned about American economy, American interests, that Americans, and that Americans in his policymaking and in his decision-making will be his first keystone focus, is the thing he will focus on.
But is this a return to what observers note, at least in history, of an isolationist instinct within the U.S.? Do Americans want their president and their government to turn away from international commitments, to turn away from the role they played either in providing security architecture in various regions in the world or pushing an agenda like human rights, for instance, and democracy?
So I think that that the U.S. of today and the U.S. of the 21st century is a global economy and a global power. And so in looking after U.S. interests, President Trump and any future presidents will have to look at the global economy and global security. And so the history of that language is maybe not as pertinent today. So I when I look at the first year of the administration, there has been lots of engagement externally. There has been lots of engagement and travel, including by the president. So the idea that the U.S. has become isolationist, or the United States doesn't recognize itself and its prosperity as tied to the global economy, I think this would not be an accurate description of the last year.
Observers coming into the World Economic Forum at Davos noted a combative tone among senior U.S. officials who were defending President Trump's America First agenda, saying that it wasn't hurting globalization or trade. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, as well as U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, were saying very strongly that all they're interested in is dealing with inappropriate behavior on the part of trading counterparties. Now, is that an accurate description of what the America First agenda is, at least in terms of trade?
I think the president and his cabinet and the language they're using, and I think that we all are, is that we want an open, transparent, fair, and reciprocal trading system, and that the trading system is rules-based, and that we support a rules-based system, and the United States always has. And that so the as the example you gave, Secretary Mnuchin is saying, we want a fair and open and transparent system that's based on rules and reciprocal. And so that we are defending the U.S. within that context. We are seeking that to make sure that U.S. economy and U.S. businesses are treated in a fair and that there is a fair playing field for all American companies.
But are the headlines then unfair? Have they mischaracterized President Trump's words? Have they seen in it a combative tone which is not existing? Because we would think that all nations want to protect their industries to some extent. Wilbur Ross also made some interesting comparisons. He noted that in terms of tariff rates, when you look at the automotive sector, the EU has tariff rates of about 10%. China has 25%. Says the US has 2.5%. So he's just, at least those are his numbers. Why is it that there's been such a hostile response to Donald Trump? Why is he seen as somehow different from his predecessors in terms of trade and the messaging coming out, say, the Obama administration, for instance?
So I think what you just referenced is every country and the leadership of every country focuses on the interests of their people, the interests in terms of developing the economy, employment. That is their responsibility. That is what the voters hold them accountable for. So part of what is this debate is happening in every country, that leadership has to look toward the benefit of the economy and prosperity for the people of that country. I think that we also, the campaign in the United States was combative. There was a lot of debate. There was a lot of disagreement on a variety of issues, including economic issues. And so one of the things going forward and in the last year is looking at the policy decisions and the efforts that the new administration has made. And so I think that Secretary Ross is headlining the focus of this is we are looking at these things and we are judging these things across the board. And it's a global. It is not we are turning inward. We are still a player globally, and we are seeking to have a reciprocal arrangement in terms of trade.
Back in September, our Prime Minister, Najib Razak, visited the White House, and he was thanked by President Trump for all the investments that Malaysia has made in the United States. In 2018, the first major trade move was the U.S. announcing tariffs for imported solar panels and washing machines. And I understand that the International Trade and Industry Minister Mustafa Mohammed has come out to clarify that in a discussion with the U.S. Under the Trade and Investment Facilitation Agreement umbrella, the government was informed that Malaysian companies would not be adversely affected by this 30% duty. The question is, was there consultation with Malaysian officials? It seemed like they were taken by surprise by this move.
So in the case of the solar panels, which is more the focus than the washing machines, this was part of a more than year process that there were industry players in the U.S., brought a case and asked for our International Trade Commission and also our Commerce Department to investigate. Companies were allowed a comment period, both and other trade associations. There's an open comment period. This is a process that's actually transparent, and it's looking at tariff remedies. And so this went on for over a year. The industry was aware of this. The companies were aware that this was happening. Companies had opportunity to comment because of the focus. And so this was not something that unexpectedly happened or was not transparent, that this process was happening. And the companies here who were affected, they were aware that this was happening, and including American companies that manufacture here. And so this was consistent with WTO, remedy of tariffs, 30% for a certain technology in terms of solar panels, is consistent with WTO, and it's for 4 years, given the surge in production in a particular type of solar panel. So this was not unexpected. It was not unknown to the industry that this was ongoing, and that there was opportunity for the industry to actually comment and provide data.
Is Malaysia seen by the U.S. administration as having taken unfair advantage of the U.S. in trade? Because that tends to be the syntax of the president's message. There are countries out there that have taken advantage of the U.S. Is Malaysia one of those countries?
So Malaysia has a there's a trade deficit between the two sides, and this is in particularly in goods. So the U.S. and Malaysia have continued to have discussions at senior levels and also working level. We are re-energizing our TIFA framework so that we can continue our discussions in certain areas. Both in trade and services, we are having these discussions. And we have worked together in previous administration in negotiating the TPP. So I think that there's a lot of understanding. There's a maturity to the relationship in terms of our discussions that are ongoing. And we are good partners and friends. So there is different industries, different causes, different calculations in terms of what the data is. We continue to share back and forth. So I think we are good partners, and we will continue to work together to try to address some of these differences between our two governments and economies and our private sectors. We have a strong private sector here. We have many U.S. firms here. So we also look to them to work with us in terms of growing the economy for both our countries.
I'm glad you mentioned the TPP. There must have been an extraordinary amount of disappointment by your counterparts in this country who, you know, had staked so much on the TPP. Now the TPP seems to have had a reboot of sorts. Is there any chance that the U.S. might come back into the fold and pick up the mantle? I mean, of an initiative that it, in fact, authored?
So I will leave to my colleagues in Washington to predict the future, because our U.S. trade representative, our Department of Commerce, the White House, they will have to decide how we are going forward in terms of both bilateral trade agreements as well as regional trade agreements. And so I will leave it to them to predict the future.
You've been listening to Her Excellency Kamala Sherin Lakhdir, U.S. Ambassador to Malaysia. Next up, we speak about the role of the U.S. in the world. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sharad Kutin, and our guest this morning is Her Excellency Kamala Sherin Lakhdir, U.S. Ambassador to Malaysia. Vice President Mike Pence was pilloried for not standing for other nations at the Winter Olympics. It grabbed headlines. He was seen not to acknowledge the extraordinary moves by North Korea in joining forces with South Korea in the Games. Do you think that America continues to get unfair and perhaps very negative coverage over the last year, partly because of the tone set by President Donald Trump, but also in the way in which his associates, including the vice president, have positioned themselves on the global stage?
The vice president, he was in Seoul to celebrate the Olympics, which is every country in the world participates, and he was with our close allies, the South Koreans. He had meetings with South Korean leadership. I think that he was very pleased to be there to celebrate South Korea's achievement in holding the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. I think that the U.S. is fully aware of the South Korean interest in inter-Korean dialogue, and that the North Koreans were going to come. So I think that the vice president's trip there was to celebrate South Korea, and I think it was very positive. Other stories I'm going to ignore.
No. Well, some critics will say that in many ways the Democratic People's Republic of Korea really turned on the charm offensive, and they got the better of the U.S. in what has been, you know, a rather dramatic to-ing and fro-ing between the two countries, your country and North Korea, over tensions there. Is there something about the present administration that can't redo the script? They're not not as nimble. It seemed like an unusually isolationist regime has gotten the better of the U.S.
So I think we need to step back and talk a little bit about North Korea. So and that that one visit, which was something that South Korea was very much interested in, does not change what is most important both for South Korea, Japan, China, the U.S., and the entire international community, which is that North Korea needs to deal with their nuclear and weapons of mass destruction programs, their missile programs. The UN Security Council, and in fact the whole world, has been putting tremendous pressure on them. So one visit and one set of smiling delegations does not change what the world is calling the North Koreans to do. In addition, I think the world also understands the nature of the regime, the human rights situation for the people of North Korea. And so what is most important, and I think what all of the countries, especially the countries involved in dealing with the North Korea situation and most closely, which includes South Korea, Japan, the U.S., China, Russia, and this region, is focused on the true actions that North Korea needs to take.
Perhaps on a more emotive note for Malaysians is the question of Jerusalem. In early December, thousands of people gathered in front of your embassy in Jalan Tun Razak to protest your government's move to shift its embassy to Jerusalem, to recognize de facto Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And I'm going to quote President Donald Trump here. He says, "This is nothing more or less than a recognition of reality. It's also the right thing to do. It's something that has to be done." Now, I'm going to quote Patriarch Theophilus III, a Greek Orthodox patriarch who is probably the most senior Christian figure in Jerusalem. He and a dozen other church leaders in the Holy Land sent President Donald Trump a warning of irreparable harm. They said that his move will yield increased hatred, conflict, violence, and suffering in Jerusalem and the Holy Land, moving us further away from the goal of unity and deeper towards destructive division. Now, that is, those are the words of stakeholders in Palestine, coming not from the political parties and the political movement, but from the Christian community. How does Trump square his vision of being a peacemaker with these kinds of assessments?
So you quoted part of what he said, which is that he, President Trump, said, "We are recognizing what has been the longstanding reality, that Israel's government, all of its branches of government, are located and have been for decades in Jerusalem." At the same time, President Trump was really very clear also that his decision was not prejudging final status negotiations about sovereignty of Israel in Jerusalem, and that he continues to urge and press forward, and members of the administration are working actively on talks between the Palestinians and Israel, and the goal of finding peace negotiations to move forward. So I think that is the focus of the administration. There are many who can disagree, who had concerns about it in Malaysia too. And I respected that there were Malaysians who were going to disagree, including in the government. But it's the nature of our relationship with Malaysia that we are partners and friends, and sometimes we disagree, but we can have frank conversations.
I mean, what was extraordinary about those protests was it brought political parties and leaders from those parties from across the spectrum, from across the divide. It seemed that the U.S. government has provided impetus for unity that no locals have been able to provide. But it's not just on the Palestinian issues, not just with Muslim populations around the world. In fact, some Christian communities are also aware of the realities of Jerusalem. But it also is the U.S. at odds with the European allies. It's also the U.S. at odds with the European allies over Iran, for instance. Is this administration creating a problem for the U.S. for, you know, that will far outlive Donald Trump's administration, whether he gets a second term or not, in creating suspicion about the U.S., its ability to play honest broker, for instance, in situations of conflict?
So I would say no, that the United States continues to play a vital role in all regions of the world, and I expect that to continue. It has been the first year of the Trump administration. There have been rocky moments, and there has been developing relationships between the new leadership of the administration and their counterparts throughout the world. But there has been a tremendous amount of travel. Secretary Tillerson currently in the Middle East for a five-country trip. So I think while there may be many things that we're debating in different ways, but still our relationships and our cooperation with countries across the world, both allies and partners, will be ongoing.
Perhaps we could end with a bit of hope on the horizon, a light at the end of the tunnel. Donald Trump came into the White House saying that he would do many things, including coming out of the Global Climate Change Accord. He's recently been quoted as saying that the U.S. could conceivably return to the Paris Climate Accord if the agreement treated America more fairly. Now, again, he has these broad statements, and help us understand what he means. Is he talking about the CBDR principles, the Common but Differentiated Responsibilities principle that was formalized at the Earth Summit in Rio in 1992 that suggests that the developing world must take a greater burden of responsibility in dealing with climate change as opposed to, say, the developing world?
So I will have to let my colleagues in Washington answer that question, though unfortunately they're not here with us this morning. I am not the administration's expert on climate change, so I fear that I would not be able to give you a very accurate answer.
So maybe we could then end on a separate question, which is, do you think the U.S. and the statements that have been made about, you know, banning Muslims from coming into the U.S. And from several countries, and also the recent moves about Jerusalem, are pitting Malaysians who are sensitive to the issue of Islam against, say, the U.S. administration? Do you find yourself having to explain this to your colleagues here or to Malaysians that you meet, that the U.S. is perhaps not as hostile to Muslims as the administration seems to be?
So I think I've explained to many Malaysians the nature of government in the United States, which is different in terms of its structure. Then in Malaysia, we're not a parliamentary system. We have a very unique system. I've also had to explain that in our system, we have three branches of government, and they are overlapping and balance each other. They also were designed by our founders to force a debate and discussion, as I sometimes call it, slow and complicated, and that was to protect decision-making, to slow it down, and to also vest authority in the people and protect their rights. So I think that in looking at many of the things that happened over the past year, what is confusing to Malaysians is the amount of debate and argument, how some Americans have gone into court and brought cases against some of the decisions that the executive branch has made. Then there have been court cases where there were stays while there had to be debate. There's been much debate in Congress. So what I have had to explain in many cases to Malaysians is this is how our system works, and it is messy and sometimes confusing, but this is to protect and to build the democracy of the United States, and that's ongoing.
Thank you very much for being here with us this morning.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Her Excellency Kamala Shirin Lakdir, U.S. Ambassador to Malaysia. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.